Welcome back to Stone Cold Shots, the wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. Every episode, every other week here, we review and we recap a wrestling pay-per-view from any promotion, from any time period. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves to our dear listeners, the Stone Cold Shots universe. Tell them your name and tell them that if you were going to name a title after something, what would your title be named after?
Oh, I love this.
It's pretty good.
I just wish I had time to prepare.
Well, I'm the internet darling, Josh Felix Pryor, and if I were to name a title after anything, I would name it after the Stone Cold Shots podcast, so I'd have the Stone Cold Shots World Heavyweight Championship for you guys.
Aww.
None of you guys are pinning me for it either.
That's sick. I feel like I'm drawing a horrible blank, so I'm going to fall back on a really terrible joke.
Okay, I like where this is going.
It's just literally the first thing that came to mind, and I don't know why. Anyway,
But who are you?
My name is Lauren. Lauren Maxine, mm-hmm. A regular darling. And if I had to name a championship belt, I suppose, it would just be called the Big Fatty Bo Batty Blunt Belt.
What the fuck?
That's what I'm saying. I'm not somebody who smokes a lot of weed, so I don't know why this came to me.
How did this pod turn into an Afro Man song already?
It's like from Sponge...
It's from Jay and Silent Bob.
Jay and Silent Bob. That's what I was trying to say by SpongeBob.
Jay and Silent SpongeBob. Apparently Chris Jericho is going to be in the new Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, I saw that.
Whoa!
Yeah. That's a tie-in right there. That's a wrestling tie-in that we got. Yeah. Chris Jericho is going
to
be in it.
We're going to have to fight Chris Jericho for that title.
That's cool.
I'm Campbell Falconer, and if I was going to have a championship title, it would be the Toronto Hardcore Punk Championship title.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think we all know that I already have have had, but I digress.
It's not playing noise in any basement, that's for sure.
Oh, God, fuck me.
I want, like, the sports goth title or something. What is it called?
Health goth?
Yeah, health goth.
Okay.
I love that shit.
Yeah, that's a title plucked straight out of 2013 Tumblr culture.
Whoa! Deep cuts.
We're back. We're recording. I feel like it's been so long since we've recorded just like a normal episode.
Yeah.
No guests, no gimmicks.
No gimmicks needed.
I mean, probably just a week or two?
No, three episodes now.
Again, Chris Candido in it.
Yeah. I guess, yeah.
No gimmicks needed.
Yeah, no drinking games this episode. We just shotgun some cold shots the old-fashioned way.
Let me say thank fucking God. Last one turned into a little bit of a train wreck, here we are. We survived.
I also, am glad to be back in my regular role as somebody with opinions, and I can yell and, I don't have to be the level-headed judge.
That's it.
Host.
I'm so glad that this is not a rigged format.
No.
Josh, speaking of Chris Candido, why don't you tell him what we're watching here?
Well, in honor of the ridiculous temperature in Toronto right now, we're watching ECW's Heatwave 98.
Yeah. We were going to watch an old SummerSlam because I think this will be coming out SummerSlam weekend or adjacent.
Somewhere around there.
Cool.
But we figured we'd much rather watch, we had such a good time watching One Night Stand that we wanted to watch some, ECW proper.
Yeah.
And Josh, apart from the name, I guess, was, kind of the shtick, but was there, a reason that you picked this one outside of that?
Yeah, this one gave a good flavor of ECW. I think all around, it was kind of in the middle of the hype of ECW, and it had Taz doing his thing with the Fuck the World Championship, mm-hmm. and the Triple Threat was in there with Shane Douglas, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Chris Candido. Lance Storm was coming up. RVD was in his prime. Sabu was doing his thing. Paul Heyman was bringing all these talents from Japan and Mexico. There was so much about this that was just kind of quintessential ECW that I thought this would be kind of a perfect place to land for a recap on it.
Totally. And it does seem like, in terms of what you were saying of this is your quintessential ECW stuff, we got a lot of this pape was kind of redone almost match for match at One Night Stand.
Sure.
I definitely felt this was okay, we're getting like all the major players, but like we're even getting some of these Blood Feud matchups that they revisit.
Like when... the Awesome and the Tanaka match, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like the Dudley Boys versus Dreamer and Sandman, you know.
I still feel like it felt very different. Like the whole tone and vibe of this paper was like totally different from the last ECW.
Yeah, and this is like, this is hot and heavy ECW. And near the end, more of the TNN run and the end of the promo was a lot more like the One Night Stand, right? Where it's a little bit more polished.
Yeah.
There's a lot more run-ins, starts of matches. Like, they came into their own a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
This is just when they were hitting their stride, right?
So, one last thing before we, like, get into it. We're going to run down the card match by match. But before that, like, how was... Were you watching ECW in 1998? Do you remember sort of, like, what the reception of this was versus sort of the reception to like a WWF pay-per-view or like another ECW pay-per-view that was happening like around the same time?
Yeah, so around this time, ECW wasn't available in Canada. So I used
you couldn't just stream it?
No. I couldn't pay $9.99 for it.
Oh, yeah.
But it was interesting because I was reading wrestling forums at the time, and that's how I got a lot of my information. Mm-hmm. And I had been reading about ECW for about a year and a half before this. And it was always so interesting to me because I'd read about like these guys like Sid and like all these guys going to ECW, and all of the wrestlers seem like folklore almost.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I hear about all these people.
I mean, even in like a current context, like New Jack sounds like a folk hero to me.
Definitely.
Like I've just like other podcasts and stuff that I've listened to. Like this is the first tape that I've seen New Jack on, and he like is totally like this mythic character to me.
And more to that is like, so never seeing New Jack and never, you know, experiencing a New Jack match where like Natural Born Killers was playing the entire duration of the match. You read about New Jack, and you know, there's this thing called the mass transit incident.
I've heard about the mass transit incident.
I have not.
Where a fan, you know, told Paul Heyman that he could wrestle, so he's like, "Yeah, I'm a wrestler. You know, let me go in there with New Jack," and he's like, "Oh, let me blade."
Well, and because this was also a thing where it was like New Jack's scheduled opponent, like something happened and he couldn't make it. So they very last minute needed someone to.
Oh, no.
And so they were like, we'll just get some local guy.
I remember hearing
about this. And New Jack with, I think it's what, like 5 justifiable homicides or something like that, goes into the match with this guy and takes a scalpel and drags it across this guy's forehead super deep. And like this guy is like gushing blood, and like there's like only like old handheld camcorder footage of this. You know, I remember seeing a video back in like, I think it was like 98 or 99 on like a WMV file, and like it was crazy. And like, so all of this stuff added to like the lore of ECW, just like this.
And also
crazy
mass transit
place.
Turned out to be like a 16-year-old kid.
Exactly.
Right. Like that father, was like the big thing. Yeah. Was his father was in the audience screaming like, stop. He's only 16.
Oh my God.
It was crazy. But again, like, so you just conjure up ideas of what these ECW characters look like. I think the first pay-per-view we got was November to remember, something like that, like 98 or 99.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first ECW I actually saw live. So this was crazy for me to go back, you know, after the fact and rewatch this stuff and be like, yeah, this was just before my time, but you can see how things were playing out, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So we kick it off. We have our play-by-play commentator, Joey Styles, in the middle of the ring.
Yeah.
Introducing his color commentator for the night, the ECW champion, Shane Douglas.
The franchise.
The franchise, accompanied by Francine. And how did we feel about this?
Francine has, like, a banging bod and, like, a very vacant expression on her face.
Yep.
they really drive home the fact that Francine has a banging bod, huh?
That was ECW's focus, right? Back in the day. They were pretty on the nose with a lot of that stuff with her and Beulah McGillicuddy's kind of feud and everything, but it was a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some stuff in this that I thought was like, obviously there was some stuff that was like pretty terrible. All the stuff of like Francine like putting Shane Douglas's, or was it Joey Styles' face in her breast?
It was like, Joey Styles.
Joey Styles.
Who has a really nasty face I just want to jump in with.
Yeah, his mouth is too big for his face.
His mouth is disgusting.
He looks like a fish, kind of.
Ugh.
But we're not here to face shame Joey Styles. But yeah, like, there's like a show your tits chant from the audience, which is like pretty rough. But like, there were certain things that I thought they did really well. Like, you had Shane Douglas is like about to get in the ring, and Francine gives him a smooch, and he just faints on the ramp. And I like, that was cute.
Yeah.
And like, Shane Douglas cuts this great, I thought it was like a pretty serviceable promo.
Sure.
Of like him just kind of like running down the card and being like, this is what we got tonight. We got this. We got this. We got this. And like, gets you hyped for the card. But it also starts with, cut the fucking music, which I love.
ECW was so good about moments like that, you know, where you forget they could swear.
Like, yeah. It just like, it hits, it sets up like the tone for better or for worse of like what the night is going to be so well.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's also something to be said about the production of it. Like, watching so much WWE now,
mm-hmm.
watching something raw like this,
mm-hmm.
yeah. You know, and like with the hard cuts and like, you know, just the production being at a certain lower level, I almost like it more than the current product.
Yeah.
And it definitely feels more like viscerally exciting.
Yeah, like something's happening.
And it seems like it's happening right dang now.
Yeah,
like, and even though we're clearly watching something from years ago, but mm-hmm. it's like, it's, it feels way more alive and way yeah. more.
And like the camera's cutting hard and then like them trying to catch up to like catch up with the action.
Yeah.
There's something about that that I, again, just from the hop on this, I just like the production more on this style of a presentation.
Even a lot of the setup for it. Like, I love the like bright blue mat in the ring. Yeah. You know, with the like just black ropes is like a very distinct in the like, because we've kind of talked about this before, where like when we watch GLOW, they have like the pink ring ropes, and when you watch like NXT, and it's like branded in a way that is very much like that promotion. Yeah. And like the genius of the ECW is they didn't have the big like WCW like spray painted on the ring or whatever. They didn't have like, it's like that bright blue thing is like it leans into the like extreme and like the sort of like punk low budget sort of thing,
where
it's
do just, it like, yourself kind of setup.
It's like, oh yeah, we just had a tarp lying around like that. Yeah. It's, you know,
it's like we made this happen against all odds. We have a pay-per-view and this is what we've presented.
Yeah. So we, again, setting the tone, it cuts into this like ECW title card and this kind of like opening montage. Oh, here are the greatest hits of like all this crazy shit that's happened so far.
And
right?
The opening montage for ECW always strikes a chord for me. Every time I hear like, this is extreme, like that whole song,
mm-hmm.
because they were so good at doing that, like production and the cuts of like Rob Van Dam doing like the Rob Van Dam and then like his spinny kick and then like Taz plexing like Benoit or Sabu. And,
yeah.
You know, just like,
there were a lot of like really fucking crazy Sabu and Spike Dudley spots yeah. in that opening video package.
The
like,
Bam.
Those are the two guys Spike. That I noticed the most.
Yeah. But that always got me so pumped up for what I was about to see. And then the audience, like, you hard cut to the audience and like they're all going nuts like they're at a party.
Yeah.
ECW just had like this vibe about it that was just, it was infectious, right?
So we get into our first match. We have Just Incredible accompanied by
Nicole Bass, the sexiest man on earth, Jason, and Chastity.
Versus Jerry Lynn. And so
by himself.
By himself. And so this is the thing where it's like the big thing for me was that like ECW, they were playing pretty fast and loose with the names coming up during the entrances.
Sure?
And I had a like, for some of the people, I was just like, oh yeah, I know that is Sabu. Or like, I know that is like whoever.
I love the way you say Sabu.
Sabu.
Sabu-mafu. It took me like half of the match to figure out Shinzaki's name.
Yeah.
Like, it took me so long. I had to like Google Hayabusa ECW yeah. tag team partner.
I did the same.
Yeah. Because like they were, but anyway, we're not talking about that match. We're talking about this match, which Joey Styles says so many times, whoever wins this match wins the feud. Which I thought
it's
was
bragging
a little,
rights.
A little heavy handed.
Yeah. Like, good for Shane Douglas for chiming in and he's like, no, it's like they win their like position to be like the next challenger for the ECW championship. You know, so he kind of like cut Joey Styles off there. I mean, like, no, it's not just pride.
Yeah.
It's about moving your way up the ranks, right?
That's good.
Yeah.
Joey Styles throughout the match, and especially the opening, had a lot of comments about Nicole Bass. He said, we should call her Russia because she's way bigger than China.
That fucking killed me.
That was amazing.
Joey Styles, again, like, he's like, I'd say 30% shit commentary, but that's 70%. He's so spot on with his comments and calls. That was one of the calls that I was like, yep.
And I was really impressed with Nicole Bass. I was like, why the fuck have we not heard more about her? Because she is way bigger than China. Like, she looks fucking yoked.
Well, she was in WWE for a little bit.
Okay.
She was doing a thing with Val Venus.
Sure.
And she was like, his unwilling romantic.
Wait, is Val Venus the super hot one?
Yeah, the porn star.
Oh, I love that. But it's not good that it's unwilling.
Yeah, he wasn't feeling it. And then she would just, like, stalk him down to the ring.
Oh, that's kind of cool if it's reversed.
Yeah. Yeah. He was the unwilling one of them. But
consent is still important.
Yeah. But. Apparently, she was a little rough to deal with backstage. She never worked out.
Oh.
Yeah. Getting into the match, like, Lauren, what was your take on the match?
I thought it was good. I've never heard of Jerry Lynn before. I'd heard of Just Incredible. And I thought it was, like, I don't know, I thought it was fine, like, a very good pace, well-paced match, and, like, clearly skillful, but nothing, like, crazy like we see in modern, like, it wasn't so fast-paced and, like, flippy or, like, anything like this.
So, I think it's a thing where it's actually, like, if you look at it in the context, if you think about, like, the majority of the matches on, like, the WCW 90s stuff that we've watched, or, like, any 90s WWF, this is shockingly modern. Like, in the same way that, like, a lot of the cruiserweight stuff in WCW really holds up under a modern lens. Like, obviously, this wasn't, like, Ricochet versus Will Ospreay, but, like, you know, Jerry Lynn is a fantastic wrestler. I think Just Incredible is, like, maybe a little bit more his gimmick, is that he's kind of like a brawler and not so much of a high flyer.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the pacing of this match, a lot of the spots that they were doing, the outside interference, is like, this would totally fit in on, like, an NXT card. Like, maybe not like
a
takeover.
I don't think the wrestling style would.
Oh, I totally think Jerry Lynn's wrestling style would 100% fit in under a modern lens.
I definitely feel like the first half of this match was, like, not that impressive, and then it kind of built as it went along, and then there were some, like completely amazing moves that were busted out later, specifically the tombstone off of the top rope,
I
believe that happens.
The top rope, that's incredible.
That's incredible, yeah.
Yeah, woo! That was cool. Woo! Like, there were a couple things that, like, Just Incredible did that I was like, oh, that's sick. But honestly, I remember I said it out loud to you, that I was like, clearly Jerry Lynn is, like, the better wrestler in this, and Just Incredible.
This was a little bit of, like, a technical masterclass from Jerry Lynn,
because
he's so good at putting together a solid technical match, and it was a perfect blend to me, like, of, like, a good hard-hitting match, like, almost like an ECW pace in a match, with a great technical, like, everything looks smooth. Jerry Lynn pulled off everything in this match as pretty and as perfect as he could.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't, like, a barn burner of a match, but, like, if you're looking at a match for a match's sake, this was just about as crisp of a match you can ask.
I think this is also a thing where it's ECW, right? And they're especially, like, the crowd, the whole thing is that they're like, oh, we're counterculture. Like, I get the feeling that these are kind of, like, the smarks of the day.
Sure, 100%.
And so Just Incredible's coming out, clearly supposed to be the heel, but getting a huge crowd response. People really, really like him. And I think, to his credit, like, his entourage did such a good job of, like, every single one of them got involved in a different way that got some really, really great heat from the crowd.
And there's a cool spot, too, when the entourage got involved in the match where I think Nicole Bass, or no, Jerry Lynn was in a full Nelson from Just Incredible, and Chastity went for a low kick.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so Jerry Lynn jumped at the time when she was kicking and totally avoided the kick.
Yeah.
And then she caught just incredible with the kick.
Yeah.
And like, we never see that spot. I've never seen that spot anywhere else besides this match.
There's yeah, a few things that I'm going to call out later that were like stuff that I have never seen and that I'm like, this is so genius. Like, how has no one else done this kind of, like, it's such an innovative.
This entire card is full of stuff like that, where it's like, this would 100% work in today's wrestling.
Yeah.
But like, specifically in this match, I saw a few spots where I'm like, this would totally get over in like NXT or WWE or like whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
These guys should go back and watch these tapes. Like
on
we
that
are.
Note, like a la Shinsuke Nakamura, Jerry Lynn does a really great dick punch to Nicole Bass at one point, which I really liked.
On that note, yeah. How many just incredible bald heads did this get?
That's not just the coolest. That's just not the best. But it got, in my opinion, it got 3.5 bald heads.
Okay, yeah.
You know, it was a better than average match. Technically, it was very sound. I like the end spot, like Lauren said, with the That's Incredible off the top.
Right, so we should say that, like, Just Incredible won the match with a That's Incredible, which is like a spinning tombstone pile driver.
After interference. Jerry Lynn, the consummate, like, babyface fighting from under, couldn't overcome the odds this time, but again, this match was pretty solid, so 3.5.
Okay.
So this is also a thing where we're going to get into a little bit of a running bit here, but Josh, you did try and hook us up with a version of the pay-per-view with the original ECW audio, unedited, which did not work for Lauren and I, so we unfortunately had to watch the WWE Network version.
Sorry, guys.
So I tried to guess, because I know that like ECW's thing is that they just used like whoever, like whatever music they wanted for wrestlers' theme songs and like a lot of heavy metal bands and stuff.
Yeah.
So based on the WWE Network version of the music, I tried to guess what the actual song would be.
Yeah.
So Just Incredible won, and I made a note that I thought, and I don't think this song had even come out yet, but maybe they were just like very prescient. Was it Down with the Sickness by Disturbed?
Holy fuck. That's such a good guess.
It is.
Snap your fingers, snap your neck. That was Just Incredible song.
Bye.
I don't know the name of the band.
Yeah, me neither. It's Prong.
Cool.
All right, cool. Great.
Close.
This is going to be a recurring thing. I have guesses for almost everybody on the card.
I cannot
so
wait.
I did so much research
just
Lauren, to get the actual answers. I should have known that Josh would just fucking know it all.
We had to pause every match for like 5 minutes just so that Lauren could find them.
That's
the
fucking incredible.
Next up, we have Lance Storm versus No Gimmicks Needed, Chris Candido, accompanied by
Tammy Lynn Sinch.
We have Miss Candido coming out to, she cuts like a little intro promo that is just like, mwah, chef's kiss.
Oh yep. My god, she introduces Candido as 240 of the hardest pounds I've ever felt.
Oh my god, yeah.
So good.
Mwah. And he's fucking amazing.
So good.
Like, he's got that. He's like fucking ripped physique. He's got that Billy Idol bleach blonde hair with the like classic old school wrestling headgear on. Guy looks amazing.
Two of the best technicians ever. Lance T. Storm and Chris Candido. Chris Candido gone too soon. He was in WWE for a drink of water. He was part of the Body Donnas with Dr. Tom Pritchard, I think.
Okay.
And then,
commentary, according to Joey Styles, we're
Joe
friends
Styles.
Like that.
Yeah.
I can call him that. Samoa Joe Styles. So apparently they were former ECW tag team champions that had like a falling out here, and
yeah,
they were sort of like fighting in this Rockers-esque blood feud.
If I recall correctly, Lance Storm was trying to join the Triple Threat
right.
with Shane Douglas and Bam Bam Bigelow. And Lance Storm was kind of a recruit for the group for a long time, but they never let him in.
Okay.
So eventually Candido was vying for him to get in and said, well, forget it. I'm just going to team up with him. And then Lance Storm broke out and, you know, slapped Chris Candido in the head or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they broke up, and this is the feud that they've got from that. So
okay. Yeah, I feel like this was pretty good. Like, again, like, it's the match that you would expect knowing these two, like, technical wrestlers, right? Like, with, like, a little bit of
there
outside
was some
interference.
Very important flavor thrown in though.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Like,
I loved Tammy. Mm-hmm. She's so vocal and so hot, and like, I don't know. She was like so important in that match, I feel.
Yelling at the ref?
Yeah, yelling anytime Candido was attacked, she would just scream.
Yeah.
And like just yelling at Lance Storm, just, you suck.
Yeah.
You suck. Yeah. I loved that. And there was like some really rough moves as well. Like, mm-hmm. Lance Storm, like, probably not, but I'm going to say he, like, German suplexes Candido from inside the ring onto the floor.
Yeah.
Like, just straight onto the floor, which has zero pad.
Yeah, that was the thing that I noticed, is, like, there's no, like, mats around. It's just, like, it's, like, legitimately onto the concrete. And that's not me saying, like, oh, WWE, whatever. Like, I could take a bump from the ring onto mats. I definitely couldn't.
But this is
fucked
worse.
There's nothing there.
Unobjectively worse than that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, in Lance Storm, both of these guys, actually, they're such phenomenal athletes, and they're so good at what they do. Like, they're both, like, crisp technical wrestlers, just like Jerry Lynn before. Mm-hmm. Lance Storm and his kicks, like, he hit a mule kick, a super kick, like a bunch of like kicks during the match. I'm like, and he's dead on with these.
Mm-hmm.
His drop kicks were crisp.
I was gonna say, yeah. I feel like he did a really dope drop kick at some point.
Yeah, there was. I like that this is before the super kick is called a super kick, because Joey Styles calls it a sideways thrust kick.
Yep.
No way.
Yeah,
and another thrust kick.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I missed
thrust
that.
Thrust kick party.
Thrust kick is that's like a Matt Stryker thing in Lucha Underground. He will almost always refer to it as a thrust kick. Unless it's somebody's finisher, which I like that flavor coming from. Again, I just love Matt Stryker so much.
Fair enough.
Again, on commentary, it was really nice to know that the reason that Candido is wearing the headgear is because he has a surgically repaired ear.
That almost came off during Rob Van Dam's Rolling Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they mentioned that later when that move is done. But
there's a really nice, I marked out for the delayed suplex spot. I could not believe how long, like, Cesaro, take a note, all right?
Sure.
Like, he's
Candido holds him up
for so long.
Yeah, like almost a full minute, and he doesn't even move. Like, you know how sometimes people do it and they kind of like shift their feet a bit or kind of like move a bit.
He's solid as a rock.
Yeah.
Absolutely still. I will say, I think it's weird that Candido like sells pain as stumbling drunk. Like,
Candido was a notorious like funny guy overseller.
Yeah,
that guy is like, again, legit like Pillman to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Candido is just like always overselling every like little hit.
Yeah,
like he just like stumbling around, grabbing at the ropes, like falling out of the ring. The guy was the best.
We get Candido coming in with some baby powder that Lance Storm just like slaps into his face.
That was fun.
And then chicanery ensues, and Tammy Sitch's dress almost comes off.
It was a terrible spot.
Much to the pleasure of the disgusting audience.
Yeah. It was awful. The ref, like, the contrivance was that the ref is yelling at Tammy, and the way that he yells at her is by grabbing her halter top and just holding it, and then when Candido kind of stumbles into her, he kind of pulls it off.
Well, yeah, so what had happened is, like, the ref was like,
and her titties
like,
come out.
So Candido couldn't see, and so he small packaged the ref, and, like, the ref grabbed onto Tammy's top as something to, like, grab onto, and as he was going down, the top came down, and then, like, the crowd goes bananas.
Start whistling.
Yeah.
I'm so shitty. And she looks like she's just stumbling around trying to keep her titties in.
Yeah.
She, like, doesn't know what to do. And then finally someone gives her, like, a coat.
And the crowd boos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she looks bummed for the rest of it, which I was just like, that sucks.
Yeah.
She was my fave part.
Definitely. And then Lance Storm goes up to the top backwards, and Tammy goes up and grabs Lance Storm's butt.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
kind of massages it. Yeah.
And then pushes him so that.
And then pushes him.
So really, no need for that.
The turnbuckle.
Yeah, she could have just pushed him, but she's like, ooh. It'd
be way better if he's aroused at the time.
So Chris Candido pulls out the win here. Mm-hmm. How many bald heads are we talking?
I gave this 3.5 as well.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are so good at what they do. It's impossible to give them on this match, I think, anything less than a 3.5.
Yeah. I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good match.
Was Chris Candido's theme song, and this is one that I feel the most confident about.
I would love to hear if you get this, because it's very iconic.
Because, okay, yeah. the WWE Network version, like, to a T, was AC/DC's Highway to Hell.
So close, babe.
What was it?
Back in Black. So funny story, Spike Dudley's theme is Highway to Hell.
Okay. Cause the network version is straight up like Highway to Hell, like if it was played in The Sims, like through like a MIDI keyboard.
Sure.
And that's like gonna be like a recurring thing. There's a couple of these that are like straight up just a song.
Yeah.
Some of them I had to guess, but some of them were just like straight up a song played on a shitty MIDI keyboard.
Can I tell you guys, like when I used to like try to find ECW themes back in the day, like 98, I used to go to like sites and they used to have MIDI versions of like the Sandman's like Enter Sandman.
Boom, 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 boom.
Stone Cold's, like when he was in ECW, he used to come out to Jesus Christ Superstar.
What?
Yeah. So Stone Cold, like, he used to be the superstar Steve Austin.
From the musical?
Yep. It'd be
has a new appreciation for Stone Cold.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was awesome. And so I used to listen to these MIDI versions to like get an idea of these guys, right?
Sick.
Yeah.
So we go to the commentary booth.
Sorry, wait, was he like doing the Stone Cold gimmick at that time, or was that before he was Mr. Whatever the fuck? Perfect,
it was kind
or
of like, or whatever? Like a junior version of what Stone Cold is now.
Yeah.
He used to come out with his like, I don't give a fuck attitude. Mm-hmm. He used to like bury Eric Bischoff.
So he was Hulk still Hogan. Like, I don't give a fuck.
He was developing. That's like, ECW is where the Stone Cold character was born.
But he came out to Jesus Christ Superstar?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's so cool.
So cool.
I love that song.
Yep.
Oh. So cool.
So cool.
So then we go to the commentary booth. Joey Styles says, we weren't going to show this, but we're going to show it now.
Yeah.
And we cut to the parking lot where New Jack's cutting a promo with a bunch of people who seem really excited to be...
They're screaming so loud you can't hear anything he's saying.
I would not be that excited to be around New Jack. I would be terrified. I would be running for my fucking life.
I would have a respectable distance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time. I would be like in the third row.
I'd be like, yeah, New Jack, fuck him up.
A safe distance where you can appreciate him, but also...
So he's talking about...
Fighting number six.
Some other guy named Jack.
Jack Victory.
Right, yeah. And then the Dudleys attack him.
Oh, I totally wrote Doug Victory.
And so it kind of turns into this huge schmoz. There's like seven people fighting in this parking lot, slamming each other into car doors, etc.
And it's hilarious. Like, this whole thing's going down and like, you know, there's beep, 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 beep.
Yeah.
And like, you can audibly hear like so many motherfuckers.
Yeah.
In this whole...
They bleep so many things, but they like they just leave fuck. They leave just leave fuck the F word in there all over the place.
All over the place. Like, just like sprinkled in.
Yeah.
Motherfucker, motherfucker. It's like, what are you actually bleeping right now?
It has to be like so much worse, right? Yeah. If they're not bleeping the fucks, that has to be just like all slurs.
It's like, no, we're going to lose our entire like network.
Fucking, yeah. Slurs all the way down.
Yeah.
So yeah, New Jack gets beaten up super, super bad, and the Dudleys and company run away.
Yeah.
Shout out to, there's some guy, I didn't catch his name, but he's like a fat guy in a Misfits t-shirt with a really righteous blonde mullet.
Meatloaf.
It's Axel Rotten and Balls Mahoney coming to save the day.
So which one has the blonde mullet?
It's Axel Rotten.
Axel Rotten. So Axel Rotten is fucking calling for an ambulance like he's about to be nominated for an Oscar. Like he is selling the shit out of this. And like New Jack is like already kind of sitting up.
Yeah.
He's like,
get me a doctor.
Yeah. He's like New Jack thinks the cameras are gone. He's like sitting up, like going for a smoke. And Axel Rotten is just like, somebody, we need a doctor! Then we cut to a Rob Van Dam promo with Sabu and Bill Alfonso.
Sabu.
I wrote an irritating, screaming little guy.
Fucking Bill Alfonso.
I hate that fucker.
He's the worst. And like, when I started watching ECW, he was so deeply ingrained in the product that I didn't understand why everybody loved this guy, because he would just blow his whistle all the time.
Just nonstop.
He'd always be screaming. The promos were never good. Like, he was like a glorified hype man. Mm-hmm. But I just didn't get it. I didn't get Bill Alfonso ever.
Yeah, Josh.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I mean, don't.
The promo, the gist of the promo basically is that RVD thinks that he can defend the tag belts basically by himself, mm-hmm. right? He and Sabu have this kind of odd couple thing. They keep talking about, they're like, I don't even know these Japanese guys' names. They're just a bunch of Japanese losers, which made me feel all kinds of uncomfortable.
Sure.
And then RVD keeps sneezing for some reason. Did no one else notice this? That RVD kept sneezing?
No, I totally didn't.
Like these really, really fake put on stage sneezes?
Nope.
Wait, they weren't even real?
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. He sneezes so much!
What are you talking about, Campbell?
Alright, fuck this. Mike Awesome. Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka. So Mike Awesome's theme song is definitely, at first I thought it was a shitty Primus ripoff, but then I realized that all Primus is shitty and it sounded more like a shitty Guns N' Roses ripoff.
Yeah.
What is Mike Awesome's actual theme
song? So it's actually the same song that was played for this pay-per-view. So like, for whatever reason, the rights,
okay,
for my, it was like originally recorded for Mike Awesome.
Okay.
And it's the same song. It was the same song on One Night Stand. It's the same song now.
Okay. There's a few later in the tape that I feel like, I was like, maybe the WWE editing team just got lazy and didn't take some out. But okay. What is it actually? Because I thought it sounded like Bad Guns N' Roses.
No, it's Phantom Lord by Metallica.
Oh. Well, late Metallica is also bad.
Or Anthrax. You're making a confused face.
Oh, so maybe that was like Mike Awesome's original theme, but like this theme was definitely recorded specifically for Mike Awesome, because like if you listen to the lyrics of the song,
mm-hmm.
so a lot of the
lyrics of the song were just like,
yeah, 6'6" guy that went to Japan, and he got like good matches.
So
okay, that sounds like a bad Primus song,
sure, right? Like, but that was like his theme song, okay. And it's like it's Mike Awesome, the theme song,
sure.
Yeah, a lot of the like these track and like artist listings that I have are from the ECW album that they put out, and I don't know why, but a lot of the tracks on that album are performed by not the band who originally performed them.
That was definitely a Paul Heyman move to avoid paying the original artists.
So but it's like when he still got Lemmy. It's Metallica. It was actually performed on that album by Anthrax, but it's written by Metallica. Like,
crazy.
And they're all the way through here. There's like,
I feel like Anthrax is still like a cool band.
Yeah. No, yeah.
They're considered one of the big four.
They would definitely want to be paid money.
Yeah. All right. And Masato Tanaka's theme song, at first I wrote down Scorpions, but it sounded a little bit more like kind of like a ripoff of the guitar solo from Play With Me by Extreme.
Oh.
So this is, it's such a cool guitar solo that we were hearing. I don't know if it was the actual thing that was played for real.
I think it was, but
it was dope. But I told you as I was writing it down, I was like, this one isn't that interesting, but it's Dangan or Dangan.
Oh, it's pronounced Danzig.
Mother.
No, that's the title by FMW Productions.
So FMW is the promotion he comes from, right?
Yeah, okay. So yeah, that's what I was. Yeah, it's,
is that like Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling or whatever?
Yeah, or like it's where all the crazy death matches happened.
Yeah. What? That was
Lauren's
laughing
right
now.
That
was a '90s Japanese wrestling promotion. Yeah. That's not totally out of the realm of possibility.
In my head, when I was watching it, I thought it was Fuck My World Productions.
So you got FMW Fuck My World, but when Taz came out with the FTW, you were like, "What does that
Frontier
stand?
My World? Frontier the World."
All right. So we get into this match. I had very high expectations based on the 2005 One Night Stand. match, and it did not disappoint. This was great.
That was a great match.
This was fucking insane. Why is Mike Awesome a high flyer? Like, that
Mike
guy
awesome
is 300
is so
pounds.
Awesome.
This man was born in the wrong generation, decade, whatever. If Mike Awesome was around today, he'd be world champion in the WWE. Like, I fully believe this.
So that mullet cool. would be world champion in the WWE.
Fuck yes, it
that,
would.
That mullet, Mike Awesome's mullet was almost my high spot for the entire tape.
Whoa. I almost want to put, like, Awesome on the back of all my underwear.
That's a good look.
You don't already?
Man, don't get into it right now.
Yeah, a lot of, like, really fun top rope stuff from Mike Awesome. Like, he's diving, like, over the barricade into the crowd.
Sure, and, like, he's, like, clearing the top rope on these dives. He's balancing himself on the top rope and, like, jumping over.
When he was just standing
on
the top rope for a bit and then just... Just dived out.
It's insane to watch this guy, and the way he, like, even, like, jumps onto the middle rope, like, he'll be in the middle of the spot in the ring and then, like, jump to the middle rope and then just, like, jump backwards into, like a back elbow. The way he does it with such fluidity and, like...
So agile.
Was incredible for a guy who's, like, 6'7", 6'8".
Yeah.
And, like, over 300 pounds.
It's, like, it's humbling to see. I was, like, affected the whole time I was watching. Yeah. I was just like, oh...
Tanaka has the most, like, gentle face I've ever seen with the most horrifically scarred body underneath it.
It's a man who's... And, like, he walks so adorably because he's got, like, this, like, really, like, stiff shoulder, upper body kind of, like, puffing out his chest kind of walk. And he's kind of, like, moving his shoulders back and forth.
He's got that, like, throwback wrestler kind of, like, fat fit. Yep. Look, where he's not like cut the way that, like, wrestlers now are cut, you know?
It's kind of like a Harley Race kind of,
but it's like he's out there fucking taking these chair shots, like,
and they have this, like,
chair sword fight was amazing.
Yeah. So cool. It made such, like, a loud noise.
Had to hurt your hands a lot, right?
I took note of that as well. But I don't know. That's such a good idea where it gets you pumped just because you're hearing really loud clashes of chairs hitting each other, but they're actually not hurting each other in any
way. Sure, yeah. And, like, I can watch these guys fight forever, honestly. And, like, you hear that chant now, but, like,
fight
honestly,
forever.
These guys are so good.
Yeah.
And they're so good at matching up with each other. And that's why I'm sure they kept on matching these guys up with each other.
It was beautiful.
Tanaka took way too many fucking chair shots to the head.
Ooh. Yeah.
Like,
but then so did Awesome.
Awesome did as well, yeah.
Yeah. Just a lot.
Just a lot.
Unprotected chair shots.
Just hurts my soul to watch.
Yeah.
Commentary said Tanaka's greatest attribute is his heart.
Cool.
And that was right after they listed, they were like, Mike Awesome, his greatest attributes are his speed, his agility, and his, like, immense strength. Tanaka's strength is his heart.
Yeah.
And it was just like, wow.
It was great.
Rude.
I loved it.
So if you look at this match and you look at, like, today's wrestling, right, with, like, the AEW stuff, this was the start of the false finish. Like, ECW was, like, the birthplace of the false finish. And you get that with, like, you know, the Awesome Bomb, like, kick out of two. The splash off the top, kick out of two.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple chair shots. I think he hit him with three.
Yeah.
To the head.
Mm-hmm.
Kicks out. And then it's like, what's going to finish this guy off? And then they went back and forth trading the false finish. And I, you know, you got to tip your cap to, like, Japan and ECW for really taking advantage of this, because it really worked in this match.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it was so well done.
Mm-hmm.
And it was paced properly that it wasn't overdone. I didn't feel like they were just trying to shove a false finish down my throat.
Yeah.
It worked really well.
Yeah. I also want to talk about, in this match specifically with Tanaka, like, that, like, the big, for all of the, like, false finishes and all of the chair shots and all of the huge dives to the outside and everything, the big finish is a rolling elbow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like...
Roaring
elbow, but also it's he spins, so
a roaring elbow.
It's called a roaring elbow, but it is like if anyone else was to do it, they would call it a rolling elbow. Right? Give me a fucking break here, buddy. But it's like the simplicity of like just like a very standard move, just done really well and sold to make it look absolutely devastating. Is like
absolutely.
I think like that was the thing that like really cinched and like kind of bumped this match up for me a little bit is that like they did all this crazy shit and then they finished it on such a like perfectly executed simple move.
Yeah,
you know, Chris Jericho's new finisher in AEW, like
his back elbow,
it looks fucking terrible. I hate it so
much. I love it.
It does not look like a finisher. He's not, something about the way that he does it is like not the way that Tanaka like does this one. It just doesn't land for me. But like on I think it could work. I think he just needs to like sort of get a little more comfortable with it.
I think we do these guys a disservice if we didn't mention the power bomb from inside the ring to Mike Awesome to the outside through a table.
Yeah.
And onto the concrete floor.
And he just
folds in half.
This match, I will never give these guys less than 4 bald heads.
It was dope.
I just can't. Agreed. Like, and they can only like go up from there, and mm-hmm. like it's only, but like for the damage they do to their bodies, how well they execute it, and like I think for the false finishes and like it being in this time, so ahead of its time, I definitely 4 bald heads.
Get a Taz promo. He's wearing like a torn towel covering his face.
He's like trying to do a really freaky like tough promo while also trying not to like inhale the fringe of this shitty towel hood.
Well, I liked this promo just for the fact that he like name checked Stone Cold Steve Austin, Goldberg, and Mike Tyson.
Yeah. Like that was ECW saying, right? Yeah. Like it's like we're counterculture, right? Like, you know, it's like whatever you're doing, fuck you guys. It's like we're doing this and this is the real stuff.
Yeah. Also, this was the point where I noticed that, like, the ECW, like, that's the Robot Chicken interstitials, right?
Okay. The staticky.
I was just like, oh, that's Botchmania.
Botchmania. But it's like, Seth Green's a huge wrestling guy, right?
Absolutely. Let's get on to the real meat of this, and that's the Dudley's promo. Yes,
Dudley's and company. The only takeaway that I had from this entire promo is that Bubba Ray Dudley's Confederate bandana is kind of a bad look. That doesn't age very well.
But my takeaway was Bubba saying, "You can give your soul to Jesus, but your ass belongs to the Dudleys."
And then they do this like cross thing, and everybody goes, "Argh!"
Yeah, this is our cross. These are our colors.
I was initially like kind of irritated by it, but they took it so far that I was like, "This is kind of sick."
Bubba Ray Dudley in ECW is probably the best promo that company had.
He's so natural.
It was so good, and those guys are heat machines.
I was really relieved didn't drop any like weird homophobic slurs
because
in this promo,
because
that's definitely a thing that he did.
But like heat wise, like there's nobody better, and like that promo is like, if you ever want to watch a Dudley's promo backstage, that's the one to watch, because they were so good at like being like, you know, laying it all on the table and then like not referring to like their opponents at all, but just like, I don't know, just like having this beautiful dialogue where they said like, you know, it's like, this is our church. And then they kept that narrative going through the entire thing. It was very well done.
So it's Bubba Ray Dudley, Devon Dudley, and Big Dick Dudley are like the three guys in the tie-dye shirts who are like actually in the match later. We got Joel Gertner, and he's wearing like a neck brace. Is that supposed to be like a joke about Beulah or like?
No, so Joel Gertner, it's kind of like Randy Orton's dad always wearing like a cast.
Okay.
So he got his like neck hurt like a long time ago, and like he just wears a neck brace kind of forever.
I did think it was funny that he had a bow tie over the neck brace. Yeah. That was cute. We got some dude with a sex doll with Beulah McGillicuddy's face on it. And then we have Sign Guy. Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sign Guy kind of felt like to me, like a little bit of a like taking the piss out of the fans. Like at this point, they knew.
So Sign Guy was a fan.
Okay.
So he was a guy that just showed up every week to ECW, and would have signs and dress like the Dudleys.
Okay.
And eventually, they just brought him out of the crowd into the ring.
Whoa!
Oh, that's
and
cool.
they like made him part of the stable.
Because in this, cool. It very much felt like, and especially during their match, it totally felt like he was just kind of like making fun of fans in the audience who had signs.
Exactly. So he would have signs that would like, but like he was a mark the entire time, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That's sick.
I feel like that segues pretty well into a little Stone Cold Shots
Sign-wise.
All right, so I know that there's one that we all had written down.
Yeah.
Very questionable. We can say it together. One, two, three. Nice implants.
That's the only one I wrote down, actually.
It's not fair you guys watch this together.
outside of that, what did you guys have? You got any good signs? It's the 90s. We're rife with signs.
I know I had some written down.
I don't have any more. You just had nice implants?
Okay. There was one that I actually thought was funny that said dork and had an arrow drawn like down and to the left. So they were holding it up and it looked like the person sitting in front of them was a dork.
Nice.
It's very clever.
I saw a got porn sign.
So here's the thing. You say that with inflection. You say, got porn? It did not have a question mark, so it was more of a declaration.
Got porn!
He's got his porn.
That man was advertising the fact that he got porn.
And again, back in 98, very tough to get.
And my last one, the cream of the crop, was Brett the Mid-Carter Hart.
Yeah. Very good.
Any more?
That's all I got.
Yeah. So we move on to a tag match. We have Hayabusa and Shinzaki versus Rob Van Dam and Sabu. accompanied by Bill Alfonso. Holy shit. Hayabusa and Shinzaki have the coolest entrance I've ever fucking seen. When Shinzaki comes out, he's dressed all in the white, like traditional Japanese, like pilgrim clothes.
Raiden hat.
The hat, and he starts taking it off, like layer by layer, and he's just covered in Japanese text all over his body.
Do you know he was in WWE for a little bit?
To use your term, a cup of coffee.
A cup of coffee.
Yeah.
But yeah, like his face tattoos, the whole deal, and he was also in WCW NWO Revenge, and that move that he did during this match, not to skip ahead too much, but the walking on the ropes with like his hand
so cool.
In front of his face, like doing like the old school walk,
but halfway through, half of the ring.
Definitely like iconic.
Yeah.
And like he made his whole gimmick off that game.
It's a good game.
Their entrance, they came out together and just like their whole procession and the disrobing and like the performance of it. I was like, this is the coolest fucking thing I have ever seen in wrestling.
Campbell absolutely was freaking out.
I was awesome.
Over the moon with this.
Yeah.
RVD and Sabu come out to what I can only assume was like just RVD's song, which sounded like a Bad Religion track. I'm not super familiar with Bad Religion, but
Pantera's Walk.
Oh, yeah? Okay. The WWE Network version did not sound like Pantera's Walk. It sounded like Bad Religion, and by that I mean really shitty mid-90s skate punk.
So RVD's theme used to be the best, because he used to come on, and they just used to loop the part where it said...
I remember you saying this when we watched
What
One
do you
Night
say?
Stand.
Yeah,
100%. This too.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it was.
I'm
awesome.
Also not super into Pantera. You know what's that old joke? What's blue and got worms in it and hairy? Dimebag.
Oh, too soon. Too soon.
I have no idea.
All right, RVD is like the most over guy in ECW, right? Like
100%.
Every other sign goes away, and the entire crowd just says RVD 420.
Yeah.
Like.
RVD's the man. Like back in these days, it's like his gimmick was so perfect because he was so arrogant and he showed such disregard for Sabu, but tried to like kind of like assholey like get him in the thing by doing like the Sabu thumb point, and then like RVD be like, yeah, don't worry, man, like don't worry, and then it's like I'm not gonna tag you in,
yeah,
and RVD just like this entire gimmick. Worked so perfectly for him, and he was so good at pulling it off. Definitely the most over guy in ECW.
He reminds me of like a really shitty bullying Chad Gable.
Yeah, I get that.
Just because they have like really cute faces and very like charismatic and sweet, just like don't worry about it, man. Like it's totally fine. Yeah. And then Chad Gable is not like shitty for almost any of his. Promos or anything. He's just a very earnest young man, but yeah. I don't know, I feel like they have the same vibe, and Gable could have just pushed himself a little further. He could have been,
if you just tried a little bit harder, he could have been over.
Yeah.
And they have the suicidal, homicidal, genocidal.
How great is Sabu's character though?
I believe it's pronounced Sabu.
Sabu. How good is Sabu in this match?
Okay, so I remember seeing Sabu in the last ECW tape that we watched, and I remember not liking him that much. I think because I was mainly scared of him, and I was just like, I don't like this man. He seems terrifying.
Legitimately terrifying.
But like that's the way they present him. Like the referee, like the whole match, couldn't control him.
Did you see that picture of him recently with Channing Decker bleeding profusely in a Toronto McDonald's after their Greektown match?
No.
Yeah. He's just like ordering a fucking junior chicken, like bleeding so much out of his head.
That's fine.
Like, that's amazing.
He's like still doing this shit. He's like so terrifying, but like he's the fucking man.
So and, like, that's the thing. Like during this match, he totally won me over. Like he was so... He's just such a good performer, and he was, like, he's a type of, like, giving performer. I have no idea how he is, like, backstage or whatever. He might be totally horrible.
Kind of a monster on Twitter.
Yeah, but, like, it's he is a giving performer in that he was, like, very good, very, like, performs everything very smoothly, but he also, like, sells really well, which is something I really appreciate. I like some dudes who feel like they're hot shit don't sell as good.
And, like, the nice thing about Sabu is, like, so, like, when he was introduced to ECW, he used to come in, like, a Hannibal Lecter mask, strapped into, like the straitjacket kind of thing, and they used to unleash him, right? And I feel like he's kept that gimmick the entire time he was in ECW.
Yeah, he seems like uncontained pent up.
And he kept that during the match. Like he was just pacing on the apron.
Yeah.
He kept on jumping in the ring at like inopportune times.
Mm-hmm. I appreciated there was a guy in the crowd dressed like Sabu.
Yeah.
Did you see that? Who was like also going fucking nuts. So Sabu does like great in this match, sells fantastic. The match starts out really rocky, though, right?
Like they had some serious chemistry problems.
Hayabusa and RVD have absolutely no chemistry.
Absolutely.
And I don't, like, commentary kind of tries to sell it by saying, like, oh, these guys have been on a plane from Japan for 20 hours. They're jet lagged. And, like, maybe they didn't have time to talk about it before the match. But
or,
it's
like they're thinking ahead of the opponent.
Yeah.
You know, like they kept on...
Like as soon as they made the tags and it was like Shinzaki versus Sabu, shit got going.
Yeah,
you know. But Hayabusa and RVD, I don't know if it was just like maybe RVD didn't really want to sell for Hayabusa or like what it was. But like this match got off to a really rough start.
Hayabusa is one of those performers that he's really good at doing his own shit.
Yeah.
But he's not good necessarily with working with other performers.
Mm. Right.
Right? So it's like RVD has shtick, right? Like he has things that he does. He's really good. If you notice this match, he was really good at like nailing the kicks.
Mm-hmm.
Like nailing like all the spots that RVD usually does.
Top rope Van Damminator was perfect.
But anything where it takes two guys to coordinate, Hayabusa was like not there for RVD, right? Yeah. So
there's so many great spots in this match. There's so much shit happening on the outside and the inside, and they're all running all over the place. Like it's just like exactly what I would expect from like an RVD Sabu kind of match.
I would say it's like a little less because it was very janky, right?
Well, like I think that's the thing is it's like bookended by like a really rough start and then this like table fuck up where they're like clearly trying to set up for this sort of like. It's not quite the Rolling Thunder, but it's like both RVD and Sabu like diving onto the table onto both opponents at the same time, and they're clearly trying to set that up, but the one table they have keeps fucking up, and that I think like those that kind of like bookending of these like really weird botches put kind of a damper on the match for me.
Yeah, and it kept on like being very stop and start for me. Like they pulled off a lot of cool spots in the match.
Totally.
And like RVD is a star. You can tell that the entire match. And then like Sabu would come in and like hit all the spots perfectly. And I noticed when I was watching this at ECW, there's a very like devil may care attitude about like how they pulled stuff off, right? They would just go for stuff and there'd be no hesitation in what they did. They would just, like, run, jump, and hit it.
Yeah. Very much a thing where, like, I know if they were setting up tables or if they were, like, setting up a spot, it would be, like, the one guy would just fucking throw it out of the way or the one guy would just pull it into the way or whatever. And it was just, like, no pretense.
Yep.
You know, about, like, we're here setting up a table spot. Let's fucking do it.
But it's
like,
all one fluid motion almost.
Exactly, yeah. That being said, there were definitely some spots in this match where, like, you had, like, two guys setting up a spot and on... an opponent, and then the other opponent was kind of just standing there waiting and watching it happen.
Like Jinsei and like in a few spots on this would just like, there's one spot in this match where he's just sitting on the top rope
for a while.
Right? Yeah. And like he was just waiting for Sabu to get up.
Yeah.
But clearly like Sabu didn't know like he was supposed to get up during the spot. Yeah. And like there was just like a bunch of miscommunications.
Yeah.
Even though I'd say like Jinsei is probably the better of the two in this match.
Yeah.
Hayabusa looks so fluid with his like flips, his dives, like everything Hayabusa did that mm-hmm. was just like a spot that he was supposed to hit.
Yeah.
He looked great.
Mm-hmm. One of the things from Hayabusa, not so much from Hayabusa, but like a spot that he does that I really wanted to call out here is like he gets up to do one of his like moonsaults or like 450s or like any of the plethora of high flying moves that he does in this match. He gets up to do that and Sabu. So he's on Hayabusa's on the outside of the ring, jumping to do like a springboard over the ropes, and Sabu is on the outside of the ring on the ground and dives to try and grab his Hayabusa's ankles and misses.
That's sick.
Which was like such great performance from Sabu. Like that. Like why? Like I think it's that thing where it's like whenever you watch something in WWE now, if somebody is going to try and break up a pin, they're not going to make the effort to break up the pin unless they actually do it.
Sure.
You never see someone make that effort and fail because it's like the thought, like I feel like the thought process and like the choreography and the booking is like so narrow that like for him to take this thing of like, well, I should at least look like I'm trying to give a shit. Yeah. I should at least look like I'm making an effort to help him out, even though like we all know this spot's going to go off. We all know that Hayabusa is going to hit this spot. But I'm gonna,
the audience doesn't.
Yeah, but I'm going to make it look like I'm going to stop him. And that raises the stakes so much.
Sure,
and again, like helps you suspend your disbelief of like the fact that this is choreographed because it looks like someone tried to stop it and they couldn't stop it.
But at times I felt this match was more like how many spots we can get in, right? And I felt that was the problem with the match, with like me totally getting invested, even though like a lot of the spots were really cool. Jinsei did like a whip to the corner, and like as RVD was going to the corner, he did like enziguri to the back of RVD's head, like that I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of spots in this match that I had never seen before that I was like, oh, that's so cool. And like, again, like this could be used today,
mm-hmm.
but like it seemed like more like, hit this spot, hit this spot, hit this spot, and then like a bunch of like discombobulation, and then like spot,
yeah.
discombobulation.
I feel that.
Yeah.
So how many bald heads did this get overall?
I gave it 3.5. It could have got more, but it just felt too disconnected. I was actually going to give it less, but like I felt like watching the match and like being in the moment, like disconnecting myself. I was like, you know what, I really appreciated a lot of things they did during the match, so...
Sure.
Yeah, was fun.
It was fun.
So, RVD and Sabu win the match here. Sabu's theme song sounded... I know that this isn't what it actually is, but to me it just sounded like a bad Suicidal's Tendencies song.
Suicidal's?
With the saxophone from Madness's Night Boat to Cairo played over top.
Oh my god.
Is that what his actual theme song is?
I think it's by like Gary and the Somethings, or like
Gary Glitter. Did he come out to Rock and Roll Part 2?
What was his theme song by?
I didn't look this one up.
Oh.
No. Well, if you know, you can hit us up in the comments.
Gary Slash or something like that. Yeah. They also did like the ECW main theme song. Same people that did Sabu's.
All right. So we set
I'm
up
saying
for...
Sabu. Now.
Sabu.
Sabu.
I'm making it happen. I'm making Pape happen. I'm making Sabu happen.
How do you say it?
Sabu.
Sabu.
Sabu. Alright, so Bam Bam Bigelow versus Taz, we get a little promo package beforehand that is lacking the professionalism of a WWE promo package, maybe.
It was mind-numbing. It was both boring and like just utterly...
Because it's just like
unfollowable.
It's like literally just like a play by play of like this guy fought this guy and then this guy fought that guy and then that guy turned on this guy. And
yeah, they didn't do a good job of selling like Taz's Fuck the World Championship, and like I feel like that should have been the focus of it, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're gonna move on to like a feud with Shane Douglas,
too far back. Yeah,
yeah, like you know, Taz is supposed to be this like guy who doesn't recognize the institution of ECW, they won't give him a fair shot, so he's going to make his own title. And that's the only title that matters. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the focus should have been on that.
Yeah.
But they got a little bit too cluttered and contrived, right?
This
it's
voice
because they wanted to tie it in with Shane, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was too much.
Too much.
This was the only appearance via voiceover of Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that he wasn't like an on-screen character, you know, in the way that like a Mr. McMahon was an on-screen character or an Eric Bischoff.
Well, I guess in the way that McMahon isn't always an on-screen character.
But even before Vince McMahon was like the Mr. McMahon character, there was still like an acting president of WWF. Like it was like what, Jack Tunney?
Jack Tunney. They
had an authority figure that like ran the show, and so this was interesting that like Paul, like I just, and it totally makes sense for what ECW is, that there isn't an authority figure,
and whenever Paul Heyman shows up, you know, like he's on the people's side,
exactly,
right?
Yeah. So it was just a thing where I was like, oh, I totally, like I just, like I feel like at this point in the game, you just like expect every wrestling show to have an authority figure.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're watching the G1 climax and you're like, why isn't Antonio Inoki out here like fucking firing people?
Why isn't he slapping everybody?
Oh my god. Yeah. I just saw that video. It's so fucking cool.
Antonio Inoki like lines up like 200 people and he slaps them one after the other.
I was so confused. Were those wrestlers or were they
They were wrestlers, producers, just like everybody associated with wrestling.
Okay.
He's it's like, it's like good luck to get slapped in the face by Antonio Inoki.
That's cool.
So,
what a cool fucking life.
Yeah.
You're that respected.
Yeah, people, I just get to hit people. Like.
The what was that guy's name? The Great Antonio must be the luckiest guy in them all. Alright, so we move on to Bam Bam Bigelow versus Taz.
The FTW Championship.
It's the FTW World Championship, yeah. So it's the Fuck the World Championship.
Yeah, that was stupid.
Bam Bam Bigelow's music is just like generic wrestling whatever, like WWE really phoned it in. It doesn't sound like anything.
Do you want to know what it actually
is?
Yeah. Do you know, Josh?
Go for it.
This actually is Scorpions.
Ah, fuck!
This is The awesome. Zoo by Scorpions.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Taz, so he has this like butt rock 90s sort of like grunge metal riff, and then somebody says,
survive if I let you.
And I was like, this could be typo negative, it could be Corrosion of Conformity, it could be Alice in Chains. It's like any one of those like three letter acronym shit bands from the 90s.
No, this is the same music as he used in ECW was the same music that was played on the network.
Okay, I didn't look it up.
Like,
what
who
was
did
it,
though?
Josh?
I don't know the artist.
I don't either.
I have no idea who
you
the
guys
artist.
Are really failing me on this bit here.
It's by Taz.
It literally
Taz wrote it.
He's the only vocals on the whole track.
Yeah.
You know how long it took me to look up what you asked me to. Why you expect me to look up things you don't ask me to?
All right. So Triple B looks great out here
wrestling.
With his fire head tattoo that apparently I heard Bam Bam Bigelow's head tattoo cost him $4,000.
Oh man, that's just $2,000 less than Francine's tits.
Got him out of the park. Nailed it.
He looks great in his jumpsuit. I'm super into the Bam Bam jumpsuit.
It's
now.
Sick.
You know what's dope about Bam Bam? He's looked the same his entire career, front to end. But he's still just as athletic as he ever was. The guy is so athletic.
Yeah.
Best big man in the entire business in history. Hands down, don't at me.
This is the first.
It was cool. It was the first time I've ever seen him before.
Same. And I was very impressed. I liked it a lot. We get this fucking dope powerbomb right off the top. Like, we're starting fucking hot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It has no cells.
No cells.
I was so angry. Yeah. I was so pissed at Taz, like, immediately. I was
so,
just like, who the fuck does this guy think he
Taz
is?
Taz gets a powerbomb from Bam Bam Bigelow. No cells. It stands up immediately and then gives him the middle finger.
Yeah.
It was sick. It was dope.
Even sell it for a second. What a dick.
But, like, you know what? I almost bought into this match more because he no-sold it.
I think, like, to me, it was that thing where it's like these two dudes are so fucking tough. Yeah. And, like, Taz is, like, so amped up. And it's, like, a thing
and
where
Taz
it's, like...
And Taz is smaller.
It's, yeah.
Right?
It's, I think there's a difference between no-selling a move like a powerbomb at the very beginning of a match.
Yeah.
Versus no-selling a move like a powerbomb two-thirds of the way through the match.
And to be fair, he does start selling later. Yeah.
Totally. So, yeah, they, like, fight out of the ring onto the ramp. But, fucking throw each other into the crowd.
Yeah, and, like, I need to buy the fact that Taz is way smaller, weighs like way less, but like can stand toe to toe with this guy. Mm-hmm. And like I got that from the first 30 seconds of this match.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's so, done very well.
Very well.
Yeah. So they fight off into the crowd. They're like hammering each other with like chairs and like railings and just like all manner of foreign objects.
There's spears. Cool. There's yeah. like you name so it's like, it's this, coming
this
in.
This is an yeah. ECW death match, which is all like predicated on the fact that like Bam Bam put Taz through the ring.
So Taz had the Taz mission on Bam Bam.
Yeah.
Bam Bam fell back in their previous match, went through the entire ring.
Yeah.
And then Bam Bam pinned him.
Mm-hmm.
Based on Taz being crushed, I imagine. Yeah,
just based on him falling on yeah.
So it's like the only way to settle this is in like an absolute no-holds-barred death match.
Sure, yeah.
And so, yeah, they like fight out through the crowd, like all around. Not all around the arena, but they do a good job of like getting out, exploring
they cover
some
ground.
Territory,
yeah.
You know?
I thought that the amount that they like explored the territory, as you said, or like used the chairs and like used other random foreign objects, if it reminded me actually of Lucha Underground.
Yeah, totally. Very
I loved it.
Very Lucha Underground deathmatch style.
It like, was not like the like I feel like WWE has started to try to go back to this to mm-hmm. start of like with Dino when Dino was like the like lunatic fringe that he would do a lot of backstage.
He goes by
Wacky.
Jono now.
Yeah, Jono.
Jono Vision.
Yeah, but like they have more and like I feel like Drew McIntyre does this a lot too and
yeah.
Roman like they have more backstage like they're fighting and going through where the merch is and they're going through where this
like
stuff is.
The,
yeah, but
Strowman Lashley match at Extreme Rules. But like the thing with that is like their avenue out of the ring is through like a predetermined like
route.
Laneway
yeah.
of like this is where nobody is and this is like right in the shit.
But
yeah,
like, their use
so
of the
cool.
guardrails and stuff like that and the chairs were a lot more violent.
Exactly. Totally. And that's like, why it feels like Lucha. Lucha does so many spots where like they just throw a wrestler into
yeah.
onto
just like
chairs.
A very like a
and
very
just, like,
haphazard
get the fuck out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like Bam Bam threw the guardrail at Taz at one point.
It was
yeah.
cool.
And it was just like a very like loose throw.
Mm-hmm.
But it hit Taz in such a way I'm like, he didn't give a fuck. There was no like
yeah.
careful planning or anything nope. with this. It was just like holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the whole outside just like very loose, very fast, but it all worked for me. Like this
yeah.
this whole outside thing was like very well done.
It was cool.
This is Shane Douglas, I think, on commentary. Surprisingly good on commentary
yeah.
for like a dude who's just like a wrestler.
Because he laid out a lot.
Yeah.
And then he
and
would
he
chime
came in.
In
and he
yeah.
gave some like really good color stuff.
So yeah. good color.
This is the first match where like he is a little bit more like taking a side because like he's in this stable with Bam Bam. He's in
yeah.
the triple threat,
triple
right?
Triple threat, yeah.
Which is, like, I guess, like, kind of the ECW, NWO kind of thing. Like,
a little bit, but it was, like, constricted to three members.
Yeah.
But same kind of deal.
OG NWO.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the ECW, NWO was the BWO, but... but, like, I like that... It, again, it kind of, like, adds to the stakes of this match.
Sure,
that, like,
yeah.
now even the commentary has kind of taken sides.
Yeah.
You know?
Because Shane Douglas desperately doesn't want Taz to win this.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the, like, you know, the unrecognized
yeah.
ECW, FTW, whatever champion.
Yeah.
And Shane knows that if he beats Bam Bam, that Taz is next in line. So it was all very, like, meticulous and, like,
yeah.
they're planning and, like...
There's story to it. There's stakes.
Story, exactly.
It works really well. So they fight their way through the crowd. They end up back in the ring. We get some pretty dope table spots with, like, the... And another thing that I've never seen before, where, like, they have the table up in the corner, Taz gets thrown into the table, and, like, the bottom third breaks.
Yeah.
And then Taz gets up and sets up the, like, top two-thirds of the table
sure,
again.
Yeah.
And just, like, reuses the same table and throws Bam Bam into
it. And also the spot that has taken to the table.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like a traditional table. Like, you'll notice if a guy gets Irish whipped into a table, mm-hmm. he'll get his back into it, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Taz went face first.
Head first, just dove.
Yeah, just like or, dove through the table, well, like, right?
More often, so cool.
Yeah.
More so often cool. If a guy gets Irish whipped into the table... He stops and goes, whoa, I didn't go through, you know?
Exactly,
they do, they do, like, fucking three... Like Hanma, nowadays, if there's a... If there's
Hanma's
a,
into the table.
Yeah, he does Hanma into the table. But nowadays, like, if someone sets up a table in, like, WWE or whatever, there's, like, three teaser spots before anyone actually goes through the
exactly.
table. And this is a thing where it was, like, Bam Bam sets up the table, Bam Bam picks up Taz, Taz goes head through first through the table. No ifs, ands, or buts, yep. No teaser spots. Just shit just fucking happens mm-hmm. here, right? And it's like, it's so, like that, when he went through the table, it wasn't even that big of a spot, right?
Sure.
When Taz goes through the table, it was kind of like a whatever transition spot in the match. Mm. I was like, holy shit! Like, because I was expecting him to stop and do the
sure.
fucking like, woo, you
know? But like, this match, like, front to end was so hard hitting. And, like, I just believed everything they were doing.
Yeah.
Which, again, like, is a nice disconnect from, like, the current product. And, like, while watching this match, I was thinking to the current product, right? Like, it was so nice to watch something different than, like, WWF at the time.
Yeah.
That was just, like, in your face, you know, hard-hitting, like, just pulling off these things that, like, you wouldn't see on, like, a week-to-week television program.
Totally.
And... you know, like, they're not, like, the most athletic guys or anything like that, but I just bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself, like, reliving that a little bit during this match. And it was really nice. Like, they did a great job this entire match.
Yeah. They fight out of the ring onto the ramp. And
yeah.
then we get, again, like, I feel like the commentary kind of telegraphed this a little bit. Because mm-hmm. as soon as they were, like, heading to the ramp, they started talking about going through the ring again.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, something's up here.
Oh, and I didn't get it, so it was dope for me when it happened.
Yeah. Bam Bam and Taz, like, go through the fucking ramp together.
Yeah.
I freaked out. Because I didn't see... Like, I heard them... I feel like I only processed them talking about going through the ring when they were first introducing... Mm. Like, the match, like, towards the beginning of the match, the
yeah.
commentators were talking about it. So, I just didn't think about it again for the entire match. So, then when they just go through the ramp, I lost my shit. I was
and
like,
it was a cool spot. Like, Taz went up and, like, he gave him, like, a tornado DDT
yeah.
through the ramp. And, like, you couldn't tell because, like, the guys were, like, walking on this ramp the entire time.
Yeah.
yeah.
But as soon as, like, it gave through, you're like, holy shit, that was, like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Did anyone notice that when the Dudley boys come out, Bubba does, like, this, he tests that part of the ramp before he walks on it. He, like, does a few, like, careful toe
storytelling.
I didn't notice that. That's great.
It was so cute.
That rocks. So, yeah, they go through the ramp. Bam Bam comes out first, and everybody thinks, like, that's it. I did think it was a little cheesy that it was, like, a death match, and the ref was going for a countout. And, like, I would have been really mad if it had ended on the countout.
Sure.
But, like, Taz fucking pops out of the ring, starts throwing
and just,
debris
like, he's got blood on his
so
face.
That is so cool.
Like, and he's, like, runs up, and he, like, jumps on the back of Bam Bam and gives him, like, the Taz mission.
Yeah.
And Bam Bam and taps him 2 seconds flat.
Yeah. Or, according to Shane Douglas, he was reaching for the ropes!
This is rigged, the fix is in!
Shane Douglas is screaming he was reaching for the ropes so many times.
Yeah, he was really upset.
Yeah, and also, big shout out to Taz's match for the suplexes. Human suplex machine.
Yeah.
Throws Bam Bam Bigelow through the table with that T-bone suplex.
Yeah.
Effortlessly.
Yeah.
It looks so good.
Suplex City.
So
Suplex City, bitch.
Taz wins via the Taz mission. Shane yep. Douglas gets so pissed that he throws a TV at him.
Yeah.
from their, like, commentary booth above the entrance ramp.
Yeah. That was sick. And then they just leave. And then that other commentator,
Joey Styles,
is just left by himself. And he's just like, bah.
I think the Dudleys are scumbags.
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Not to jump ahead too much, but I feel like that Joey Styles promo on the Dudleys was really good.
Yeah. Before we get to that,
you brought it up.
How many tattooed Bam Bam Bigelow bald heads does this get?
I give this 3¾ flaming heads.
Again, $4,000.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
It is.
I thought this was a super enjoyable match.
Yeah.
I thought it was stiff. Like, the guys, like, again, like, I was interested front end in this match. And I don't know. Like, I don't think they could have played out a better scenario. And then, like, a good callback to, like, the spot through the ring. 3 3/4 all day on this match.
That's good.
All right, so Joey Styles cuts this promo on the Dudleys.
Yeah, I don't know, I liked it. I hate Joey Styles, but I really liked that he took it to like a somber tone to explain what happens to
Beulah.
But like, I think it's so important that they sell the 3D so hard.
Yeah.
You know, like, they don't build a move like the 3D anymore, right? So they talked about Sandman, they talked about Tommy Dreamer, they talked about all the people that they put out of action with it. And then, like, to the cherry on top was Beulah getting her neck broke by the 3D.
She just didn't want to wrestle anymore.
Retires, right?
And then retires because of it.
We're doing fingers.
Okay.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of quotes. We're doing a lot of air quotes.
So I think the genius of this promo is, like, again, you've had a commentary team that has been, like, fairly impartial throughout the whole thing, right? And that it's, like, in the previous match where it's, like, Shane Douglas clearly has a reason to dislike Taz because he's worried about Taz coming for his title. And so his lack of impartiality in the previous match really sells how important the match is for Taz and really sells how much of a badass Taz is.
Sure.
Whereas Joey Styles' lack of impartiality here, and him as, like, he's not a wrestler. He doesn't have any skin in the game. He's a suit. He's a guy in a tie. And so for him to be like, I hate the Dudleys, I think they're scumbags, when he's allowed for, like, so much other bullshit and shenanigans and chicanery to happen, like, for me, that really put over how despicable the Dudleys are.
And that's what made it so good for ECW back in the day, because it was a bunch of marks watching it, right? And they knew all the insider lingo.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't care what the back says. I'm not putting these guys over. Like, no matter what, like, I'm not talking about these guys.
Yeah, he says, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah.
They come out with zero commentary. Zero
commentary. And I'll talk when the next guys get out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Dudleys and Entourage come out to absolutely no music, just like a chorus of boos.
Yeah.
Like, and it again, like, in a crowd where earlier in the card it was hard to tell who was the face and who was the heel because the crowd was just cheering everybody because they're a bunch of smarks. It's great that the Dudleys are able to get that level
in
of derision.
A sea of marks.
Yeah.
These guys are natural fucking heels, and they're, like, so despised.
Fucking Bubba Ray comes out and challenges everybody in the arena to fight him.
Yeah. Yeah.
His opening words.
That's the kind of energy that I'm trying to put out into the world.
His opening line is, I hate each and every one of you people out here.
Yeah. That was a great one.
Yeah, and he's like, jump the guardrail, come down to the ring, I'll kick your ass. Like, it's so good.
Sign guy's got, like, a real Sunday Night Heat sign, which was hilarious.
As good as Bubba Ray Dudley's promo is, Joel Gertner's promo is fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
Does not hold up to a modern lens at all.
Just awful.
But his intros for every one of the Dudleys, I feel, were on point.
Yeah. Mm.
They were very, very good. And, like, the whole thing with the Dudleys is they're, like, same father, different mothers.
Yeah.
And they're all from a different part of Dudleyville.
Yeah.
I liked the different part of Dudleyville. I liked the Devon's weight being none of your damn business.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't remember what they said, but Devon's intro was sick.
Yeah. I am, at this point in the match, I am already sick of the name Big Dick Dudley.
Yeah.
That joke has already played out to me. It's not funny anymore.
I don't know. I like it.
Yeah. It gets less funny as we go along.
I don't know. It's like, for the speed and the energy that the Dudleys are bringing, I think it fits in pretty good.
So then we have Tommy Dreamer, the Sandman, and Little Spike Dudley come out to a, like, MIDI keyboard, like, piped-in version of Man in the Box by Alice in Chains. Am I right on this one?
You're 100% right. That was Tommy Dreamer's
the man in the box.
100%.
So they do this entrance, right? They're all carrying ladders. Sandman's hacking a dart on the way to the ring.
Can I tell you, the entrances and the introductions for this match actually were longer than the actual match itself?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Which I'm okay with.
I think it worked. Yeah. I never felt like the entrances dragged, and I never felt like the match missed anything. So yeah. I think it worked.
Sandman is the fucking coolest. Like, he's out there, like, he's bleeding so much before he even gets off the ramp from smashing beers into his head.
Like, he's gushing blood.
Yeah.
And let's talk about how cool that Sandman shirt is.
Yeah.
It was like cool. A Budweiser logo with the Sandman on it.
Yeah.
And if any of you out there in the universe have it, please send it to me.
Yeah. Our address is.
Yeah. I am, like, weirdly, like, I guess not weirdly, I'm prejudiced against Sandman, and I just don't like him because of how fucking objectifying he is to women. But I was, when I was watching that, I was just like, that's a cool shirt.
And there's, like,
it's a cool shirt.
There's somebody holding a sign that says, pour beer here, with, like, an arrow towards them, and Sandman just stands up and, like, slams a whole beer and throws the can at their face.
That's,
and, like,
sick.
The person is just like, yeah, that's still cool. I'm into it. Like, all of that being said, I think that, like, this entrance, and to an extent, this match as well, like, watching One Night Stand beforehand kind of did a disservice to this. Because sure. I think, like, the Sandman entrance at One Night Stand to enter Sandman is a better entrance, like, him coming through the crowd is a better entrance than the three of them on the ramp coming down to Man in the Box.
Yeah, and I think at this point, they were just, like, trying to, like, get Tommy Dreamer in the over position,
totally.
Right?
And I also think, we'll get into this match in a second, but I also think that, like, just from the outset, the more stripped down version of just Tommy Dreamer and the Sandman versus just Bubba Ray and D-Von was a better match than this with all of the entourage and the little Spike Dudley.
Absolutely.
And the New Jack run-in.
But I will say, Little Spike Dudley adds a dynamic to the match where it's...
Moranis on SCTV dynamic.
I actually really liked Little Spike...
Little Spike Dudley in any ECW match adds a level of... these guys are absolutely killing this little guy. And how can he come back from this? And if anything ECW did with Spike Dudley is how every promotion should book... you know, a little undergry, underdog performer,
right? They were also
doing,
like, fucking crazy spots. Like, he's literally, like, standing on people as they're draped over the railing punching them in the back of the head. Like, it was like, if you're going to have people with such a, like, just a dichotomy in their size, like, do the crazy shit that you can do
absolutely.
With that.
Like, he also jumps from the top of a ladder inside the ring to, like, outside the ring.
And it was a rickety ladder, and the way he climbed it and jumped off was a seamless motion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like everything else in this promotion was just
no
like...
No setup, no muss, no fuss.
Yeah, like, he just climbed up this there. Like, doo-doo-doo-doo, and then he jumped off.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There was no hesitation.
It was
very cool to watch.
Yeah. There's no, like, oh, the ladder is shaking, so it's going to take me about 45 seconds to ascend.
Exactly. Like Sandman kind of had half a lean on it. And then Spike Dudley just, like, zipped up it and, like, jumped off, right?
Yeah. All of the Spike Dudley spots were, like, super, super fun. I really, really liked his involvement in the match.
And then the rest of the match happened.
Yeah. Sandman's looking pretty rough, man. Like, I think Sandman is cool as fuck, but, like, he's got, like, a hella beer gut. He doesn't have that cool barbed wire tattoo yet.
A couple
of pretty stiff fucking shots with the Singapore cane to somebody's face. That was pretty cool.
But, like, the match itself was, like, very start and stop. So, like, very reminiscent of, like, the RVD Sabu match, where it's, like, there was a lot of nothing going on and a lot of, like, disjointed spots.
Well, and it was like everybody had to get their shit in, right? Like, they had to get Sign Guy in there. They had to get, like, whoever the guy in the Dudley's entourage that, like, used to be a ref but isn't a ref anymore but had to come in and get
judge.
Kicked in the face or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, like, there were too many people, you know?
Too many cooks, and it was just, like, one of those situations where I was watching and I was like, there's too much going on and it's a lot of start and stop. And I was like, every ECW match I didn't like always, like, went with this formula.
Yeah.
And the match itself, again, like, had some very cool spots in it.
I really liked the part where they did a four-way, Like, I don't even... It's just a setup where they did a four-way, like, jump onto folks in the corner.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
the ref was the fourth man. I liked it. It was cute.
So that was a great spot. Yeah. Like the Tree of Woe. Like, and they had a few, like, cool ladder spots in the match as well. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think this match kind of sucked.
So Dreamer ends up taking the win.
Yeah, and, like I gave this match 3.25.
Sure.
You know, and that's including with the intros. Like, that's including, like, the Dudleys doing their thing and, like, you know, the entrances and all that cool stuff.
Yeah.
It did not include the post-match celebration.
Ooh, so Jack Victory comes out and busts somebody with a guitar.
Yeah. And it's, like, very powdery.
Yeah, it's a guitar filled with baby powder.
That was the ECW spot.
Yeah. That was pretty cool. And then New Jack comes out with, like, a shopping cart.
Yeah, there's, and, like, Natural Born Killers is supposed to be playing.
Oh, yeah. So I just by wrote NWA. Down, it sounded very... okay, so at least I got part of this right. Like, I at first I was, like, Snoop Dogg. And then I realized that the rapping was too fast. And the synth sound was, like, a little too janky. It was, like, WWE trying... to do Dr. Dre production, but sure. not up to the caliber of Dr. Dre production.
Yep.
So I just wrote down Dr. Dre ?
So you kind of got it right.
Extra element was Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the rest of NWA.
And Eazy-E and MC Ren. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you. Yeah. But
officially,
New Jack comes out and, like, starts busting people up. He's got, like, a stop sign.
Yeah, that was fun. I actually liked the stop sign.
A guitar.
It was like, man, I was like, I really, the next ECW tape that you pick for us to watch has to have, like, a full New Jack match on
100%.
Because I want to watch New Jack fuck somebody up so bad.
I'll try to get you the one with, like, New Jack and Angel on it.
Okay. Because, as, like, long as it's not Mass Transit, I don't want to watch
that. No. I don't think that's a full pay-per-view, so I think you're safe.
What, it wasn't the Mass Transit pay-per-view?
But this whole post-show thing was great. So New Jack comes out, starts busting everybody up, like kendo sticks, stop signs, shopping carts.
And it's, I love that they just keep his music going the whole time. It's amazing.
And it's amazing when it's like NWA playing the entire time.
Yeah.
Because there's like this ominous kind of thing to it.
Yeah.
That's like playing throughout.
Yeah.
And then it ends in, like, the most ECW way possible with, like, Sandman, Tommy Dreamer.
And New Jack up on the ladders.
Up on, like, these very high ladders. Yeah.
With little Spike Dudley doing fucking laps around them.
Totally.
Like, that was a great finishing shot.
But like, it made you feel ECW.
Totally.
Right? Like, it was a happening, right? Like, and the crowd was part of it. It was a party going on. Everybody's in on, like... what's going on.
It's a ending where everyone feels good.
Yeah. And like, and that's what's different about wrestling today, right? Like, it's, there's no, you're in on the party. Mm-hmm. Like, even AEW, right? I feel doesn't have that connection yet.
Right.
With the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Where ECW is like, we're part of something.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
We're part of, like, a movement.
AEW is trying very hard to do that.
Exactly.
But and I feel almost like, trying too hard to
I
do that.
I think that's
almost.
Why it's like not working
they
really
they can
now.
Really give it a rest. Like, to me, all of their promo packages that are like, and in that moment, we started a revolution.
Yeah.
It's like, I pumped the brakes. Or it's like, we made you remember what it felt like to be a fan. It's like, shut the fuck up.
And like, even though I like... and connect with a lot of the AEW people, like, the ECW people had this just air about them.
They're so genuine and raw.
Yeah, like it's so raw, and, like, it's like I couldn't connect with these people. Like, I couldn't connect with a Sabu.
Mm.
He's so, like, off the chain. Or I couldn't connect with a Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just so, like, elevated.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's something about ECW, and especially in this time, that was so, like, unique and, like, special.
So there's some good closing thoughts, but our real closing thoughts...
clothing spots.
always take the form of some high spots and some botch spots. So this is one thing that we thought was really great, and one thing that we thought that was not so great that maybe we haven't talked about or just wanted to go back to and hammer on real hard. So my high spot... is that all of the refs were dressed like NASCAR pit crew.
Very good. Very good.
I was really into that. There was no stripes, you know, just like guys in diagonal red and black anarcho-communist referees.
It's weird, like I like
Jesus Christ.
I liked their look from like a fashion standpoint, but it was confusing, like for the matches where there were so many people in the ring, it was hard to distinguish the refs from just random fucking sign guys in the ring. Mm. I don't know.
My low spot, aside from like a lot of the obvious, like sort of, objectification of like Francine and like the way they talked about Beulah and stuff. Like, I think that goes without saying.
Yeah.
My low spot that like I was really bummed out about was like the Hayabusa Shinzaki RVD Sabu match, that like just based on like what we were promised and like what those entrances were versus like what we actually got was just such a bummer.
Yeah.
And then Bill Alfonso like fucking reefing on the whistle the whole time really didn't help. Like that got, At first I was like, oh, this is cute. And then 2 seconds later, I was like, all right, I'm done with this. Like, fuck that guy. I don't know. I've heard so much about Hayabusa, you know, like he passed away fairly recently. And
yeah,
he
actually, he broke his neck doing a shooting star press.
Yeah.
And was like,
did he die?
No. So he was just, disabled okay. from then on out. And, yeah, it was really sad because it was just, he's done the spot a thousand times mm-hmm. before, mm-hmm. went for the shooting star press once, broke his neck, and then yeah. ended his career.
Damn.
And he's a guy that I've heard a lot about and have been too lazy to look at his like back catalog.
Yeah.
So this was kind of a thing where I was like, oh, sick. Like this is like, he's supposed to be great. Like I know RVD and Sabu are fantastic. Like I haven't heard about this. Oh, holy shit. He has paintings all over him. This is going to be amazing. And I just didn't really live up to it. You know, yeah. like I felt like that match really fell flat for me.
Yeah. My high spot is the Master of Tanaka and Mike Awesome match. I mean, that whole match front to end. I mean, those guys are so good and, you know, they deserve so much better. You know, like they got the stage and the spotlight in ECW, but man, like on any other platform, that's like worldwide entertainment. Like mm-hmm. they should have been much more in the spotlight than they were.
I'm still so blown away at like the spots that Mike Awesome
yeah. can,
like for, like he spent like 90% of that match on the top rope and he's
insane.
A billion feet tall. And weighs more than a car.
Like, that's it. It's like Hulk Hogan cool. if he can do jumps off the top rope.
Yeah.
Tope suicidas and like all that stuff, right? Low spot is the same. I mean, you know, that match should have been a lot better than it was. You know, watching it, I didn't remember this match. So I went into it with like a very like high expectation, especially with like Hayabusa and stuff being in it. Like I know how good he is. And, yeah, the chemistry was just lacking the entire match. They just couldn't get it going. And, like, even on simple spots, like a roll-up or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it was, you know, they were just, like, off rhythm. And that's too bad because that's a once-in-a-lifetime match, and it was.
Yeah.
All right, I feel like a couple of my points were stolen. So I'm just going to reiterate a couple of points. I'm going to do my thing where my high spot is two spots. I really wanted to like shout out Tammy Lynn. Yeah, I really liked her presence and I loved how vocal she was. I don't know, she was just so like natural and confident in the ring, and I towards the beginning and most of that match I loved the way they used this woman
yep.
in a really shitty promotion towards women. I loved how they used her and it made me really excited.
Absolutely, yeah.
I also just wanted to shout out, like, I really like Sabu, and I don't know, I didn't like him before the last
in so he won you over with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like him now.
He's great. Like, honestly, like, just the way he carries himself and, like, again, like, pacing on the ring.
Yeah.
Like, he's this, like, uncontrollable animal.
Yeah, he really commits to the bit.
Yeah.
And I love it.
And he's smooth too, right?
Yeah.
Like the way he was like jumping off the ropes and the way he can stabilize himself. And then like his jumps, like he was always like
his pinpoint. Chair stuff too, like all of those like leaping from the chair to the ropes to like a moonsault to the fucking whatever.
He would always be able to nail that shit.
Yeah, it's weird. Like he seems so smooth and so perfected, and yet it doesn't seem like he's a trained wrestler. It's also, like it seems very effortless. Just like natural. He's just like a natural born brawler, but it's beautiful, like wrestling moves where
absolutely.
It's like. It's totally unfathomable that he wasn't trained in all of this shit, but like, I don't know. I loved him. And my botch spot, I guess like a quick little shout out to, again, just my girl Tammy being like kneecapped in the way that she was, where her titties fall out and then she just becomes an object again, was like kind of shitty after how much I was built up to like her for that whole match and how much agency she had.
She was so surprisingly, like, up until that point, like, empowered for a, like, hot woman valet in 90s wrestling.
Yeah.
You know?
Because, like, she controlled the two guys.
Totally.
Yeah. I loved it. And the ref, like, and Joey Styles. Like, she was just totally in her element there. So I didn't like that they took that from her.
Yeah.
So that about sums it up for ECW Heatwave 1998. Great pick, Josh. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Can't wait to do some more ECW. If you have any recommendations for other ECW pay-per-views, you can hit us up at facebook.com/stonecoldshots.
Yeah, Instagram. You can hit us up at Stone Cold Shots Podcast.
Yeah.
Please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, on all your other podcasting apps. It helps us a lot move up in them iTunes lists.
Yeah, we're almost at that 1,000 listener.
By the time that this comes out, we might have 1,000 listens, which, like, maybe we'll do a little giveaway or something for that.
Oh, that'd be huge.
So,
can you imagine somebody at home watching 13 rounds?
12 rounds.
What? Dude.
I have a copy of 12 rounds that I'm willing to mail to you, the listener.
You're going to give that away, baby? That's ours.
I found it on the side of the road.
It's and it could be yours.
Keep your eyes peeled on our socials, and maybe you could be the proud owner of a DVD copy of 12 Rounds starring John Cena and the guy from Game of Thrones.
Which one?
Littlefinger.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
With his natural accent, which is very weird.
Fucking Tommy Carcetti from The Wire.
Yeah. Also that.
Bye.
Bye.